More than 25 years after that woman walked into the ER, I'm still practicing medicine, but in a very different way from how I had imagined. I no longer perform cancer surgeries or any other kind of surgery. If you come to see me with a rash or a broken arm, I probably won't be of much help. So what do I do? Good question. If you were to ask me that at a party, I would do my best to duck out of the conversation, or I would lie and say I'm a race car driver, which is what I really want to be when I grow up. Plan B, a shepherd. My focus as a physician is on longevity. The problem is that I kind of hate the word longevity. It has been hopelessly tainted by a centuries-long parade of quacks and charlatans who have claimed to possess the secret elixir to a longer life. I don't want to be associated with those people, and I'm not arrogant enough to think that I myself have some sort of easy answer to this problem, which has puzzled humankind for millennia. If longevity were simple, then there might not be a need for this book. I'll start with what longevity isn't. Longevity does not mean living forever, or even to age 120 or 150, which some self-proclaimed experts are now routinely promising to their followers. Barring some major breakthrough that somehow, some way, reverses 2 billion years of evolutionary history and frees us from time's arrow, everyone and everything that is alive today will inevitably die. It's a one-way street. Nor does longevity mean merely notching more and more birthdays as we slowly wither away. This is what happened to a hapless mythical Greek named Tithonus, who asked the gods for eternal life. To his joy, the gods granted his wish. But because he forgot to ask for eternal youth as well, his body continued to decay. Oops. Most of my patients instinctively get this. When they first come to see me, they generally insist that they don't want to live longer, if doing so means lingering on in a state of ever-declining health. Many of them have watched their parents or grandparents endure such a fate, still alive, but crippled by physical frailty or dementia. They have no desire to reenact their elders' suffering. Here's where I stop them. Just because your parents endured a painful old age or died younger than they should have, I say, does not mean that you must do the same. The past need not dictate the future. Your longevity is more malleable than you think. In 1900, life expectancy hovered somewhere south of age 50, and most people were likely to die from fast causes: accidents, injuries, and infectious diseases of various kinds. Since then, slow death has supplanted fast death. The majority of people listening to this book can expect to die somewhere in their 70s or 80s, give or take, and almost all from slow causes. Assuming you're not someone who engages in ultra-risky behavior like base jumping, motorcycle racing, or texting and driving, the odds are overwhelming that you will die as a result of one of the chronic diseases of aging that I call the Four Horsemen: heart disease, cancer, neurodegenerative disease, or type 2 diabetes and related metabolic dysfunction. To achieve longevity, to live longer and live better for longer, we must understand and confront these causes of slow death. Longevity has two components. The first is how long you live, your chronological lifespan. But the second, and equally important part, is how well you live, the quality of your years. This is called health span, and it's what Tithonus forgot to ask for. Health span is typically defined as the period of life when we are free from disability or disease, but I find this too simplistic. I'm as free from, quote, disability and disease as when I was a 25-year-old medical student, but my 20-something self could run circles around 50-year-old me, both physically and mentally. That's just a fact. Thus, the second part of our plan for longevity is to maintain and improve our physical and mental function.